This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It was boring. People were sleeping. Nobody enjoyed it. There was no good feeling.
3, 2, 1. This is Regis Philbin. When I'm in Omaha, Nebraska, I listen to Chad.
What is wrong with you?
Morons, incompetent morons, these people are morons. La-dee-dee-dee.
Listen before you text.
This is Joe Mauer of the Minnesota Twins, and I never listen to Chad Hartman from noon to 3 on WCCO.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
I think we got the point. Hey, we're here. It is a Tuesday. We're actually on the air. Twins, not on the next couple days when we are on the air. They will be back on the air. Is it Friday? Is that the next ball game?
Friday, 5 p.m.
Friday, 5 o'clock. So
Twins and the Red Sox.
We're back.
Only two teams at play in spring training.
That
Twins
is
Twins and the Red Sox.
Okay, who beat the world champions yesterday? Does that make us listen,
with our opening day lineup?
I don't see a flaw. Do you?
Nope.
I wouldn't even take Trout. I mean, maybe he's a bench guy.
Don't need him.
Yeah, maybe he's a bench guy. Let's get right to it. We have actually, not joking, some significant news regarding the show that we are going to lead with. We do have three excellent guests throughout the show, which we'll tell you about. But we are about to have a change with our show involving one of us. It's not me. It's not Adam. It is the next individual who is about to speak. Try to get you fired, but you got a Trout-like contract here at this place. So, Lindsay, the microphone is yours.
Thursday's my last day. Obviously, this feels a little deja vu-ish because I did this back in November. But for people who maybe weren't paying attention or just didn't kind of catch the conversation, when I left for St. Thomas, it was my intention that I was not coming back. And while I was gone, some stuff happened behind the scenes. And so I came back at the end of December. And there's a non-negotiable in my life about growth and opportunity. And I am going to leave and pursue some other stuff. I mean, that's basically it. That is the bottom line. There's no hard feelings. I respect the hell out of people here. I just have come to a point where I think my chapter here is kind of coming to a close. And I think that there are a lot of talented people here, and I hope that someday I get to work with them again. But I'm just kind of looking for some more opportunity, more growth. I am incredibly career-driven and have always really held that to a very high standard, and am just going to kind of invest in myself for a little bit. So
we are not as good a place once you walk out the door, which will be Thursday, whether it's on this show, whether it has as a station. I think anybody who's listened to this show since you started on Halloween Day, correct? Knows the relationship the three of us have, get along on air, get along off air. I think the world of you. I don't have a single doubt that you will be successful in a myriad of ventures down the road. Hopefully we all stay as close as we are now. I think on the radio station side, it's once again time for a little introspection. When the emphasis when I walked in the door here in 2009 was, let's just deal with the reality. WCCO once was the dominant radio station in this market, and since the 80s and 90s, the station has not been that dominant, right? Nobody is as dominant as CCO once was. WCCO is still a very, very influential and is a player in this market. But when you just look at the facts from the 80s to where we're at now, this radio station has slipped significantly with individuals in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And every single day since I've been here, since fall of 09, it's what can you do to bring more 30, 40, and 50-year-olds to this station? That is not to run out people who are older. That would be silly. But the emphasis needs to be on that. And if you want to talk about somebody who can bring 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds to this radio station, Lindsay Gentzel is near the top of the list. So I wish her only the best. I am disappointed that she will not be here. I'm also disappointed because we on the show have watched this happen before, that we've had four producers in 10 years. And all four, actually all of us are all friends. All four producers were as good, if not the best producers in the building while they were here. But because we have a seniority system and because we have a tendency just to repeat what we do, they all left. And when you have people who are talented and when you have people who are making literally tens of thousands of dollars less than others, and they're, just to be really blunt, significantly better than them, it is a mistake. And I hope the radio station realizes that. So this will be not the last you hear of Lindsay, because she will be successful in whatever she pursues, and we'll continue to follow that, no doubt about it. Mr. Carter has a news update right now. Yesterday, Adam Carter went old school. He put on his hat. He put on his trench coat. He found his press pass. And he reminded himself that he still is a hard, scrabbled reporter.
Pack of cigarettes. And cracked open a pack of Marlboro Reds and put one into my mouth and lit it up. And then I was told, you can't smoke on the light rail train.
Well, and then he went and he covered a complicated, difficult story, which would involve...
Ask the hard questions.
Crime, difficult characters, and potentially murder. Or he went to see a new sports venue and probably there was food there.
No, there was food. I did not partake in.
Why?
Actually, I wanted a scarf. I mean, it was Scarves Up Minnesota.
I'm so sick of the scarves. Why have we... What is the origin of soccer and scarves from decades and decades ago?
I don't know. I think that it's judging by, I'm like all in on soccer, by the way, lately. I don't know what it is. But
I know you are. Lindsay, can you look up the scarves?
I would think that
soccer?
Just because in England.
Cooler?
It's just cooler.
It's simple as that.
It is. It's the weather is not good when they're playing soccer in England. If you watch any significant times,
the Champions
League, always raining.
It never ends, Adam. I mean, the Champions League.
Yeah, there's always something. Which is kind of nice being a sports fan. I mean, you always got something to look forward to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would guess that it's English and it's the weather.
Goes back to the early 1900s. Adam nailed it. English fans wanted to, or United Kingdom, fans wanted to stay warm without sacrificing their team spirit.
Yeah.
Black coats were commonplace and no one really wore jerseys. So colored scarves became
Makes sense.
The way to do it. Yep.
And with our weather, makes sense. Now, thankfully, to the league's credit, they moved the season back like about a month, right? Because the MLS was imitating the Champions League where, I mean, the season still finishes in November, right? And then the season was starting like in February. Yeah. It was crazy. So you were at Fingers McGuire's place. I'm going to start calling him Fingers because among Patrick Royce's greatest nicknames, and no one on the planet has come up with better nicknames than Patrick. Donald Trump is an amateur compared to Patrick. His late tax guy, man I knew well too, Eddie Cohn. Patrick would affectionately would call him Fingers because his capability of working numbers. Billy McGuire and decide when the stock options are going to kick in, whether he had to pay back $400 million or $600 million. Seemingly we've all forgiven him for that. I don't quite understand that myself. I have not. So he will have the nickname going forward as Fingers McGuire on this show. So you saw Fingers' place, and you're spellbound.
I am spellbound. It's gorgeous.
You love it?
It is gorgeous. And for $200 million?
Oh, yeah. Because you're saying compared to TCF Bank, it's a blowout.
It's a blowout.
Yep. Now, TCF Bank has to come up with 50,000 seats.
Right.
Right? So
it looks – that's the thing about it. It's like, you know – You want the thrust is to make places more intimate.
Yeah, right.
Except U.S. Bank, but I mean this
U.S. Bank. So it's just
20,000 seats. It looks a lot bigger than
does
that
it?
When
you're
in
okay.
There. But it's cool. I mean, it is. It's gorgeous.
It looks fantastic from the highway.
Yeah,
it is. It stands out.
The north end. So if you're on the north side of it, where that brew hall is, that's obviously a no-brainer.
Right. Pretty
good, nice big, you know, bar, beer
now,
hall.
Now we know why you went.
Yeah. But just, I mean, everything, obviously, it's not a bad seat in there. It just, the color scheme, too. I love that team's colors. I mean, the light blue.
Light blue. I do like, I think yeah. Their color schemes are.
Oh, yeah. The light.
Do
the
they
logo.
Have the best color scheme in town?
I'll go, you know, that I don't know about color scheme, but logo, I was almost ready to put it on the pedestal, but I think the TC Classic Twins logo
classic
is probably
Twins
number
logo.
One.
See,
but
I,
that Loons logo is pretty
good.
Cool.
It's very good. Okay. Why was Jacob Frother?
I don't know. That's a good question. I asked the same thing. Not him, but if I would have been able to ask questions, I would have said, hey, what are you doing here?
Exactly. Yeah, because Betsy.
Well, he did point out that the stadium
punted on that
equidistant between downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul.
Yeah, it is. But what city is it?
It's in St. Paul.
It's in St. Paul, right? So he's trying to freeload a little bit. Okay. Ability for fans. What we all love now is we want to be able to walk around,
yep.
Have fun, and if we want to, watch the action. Can you do that?
Yes. Wide open concourse,
right?
Like all stadiums now, it's pretty open. And let's be honest, I mean, the Minnesota United is not going to attract, you know, 50,000 people like the Vikings will on
yep.
Sunday. And the stadium only holds 19,000. So, of course, it's going to fill up right away.
Do we think
I don't
that's
know, are they
right
going to sell out all year?
Well, right. Early on, they're going to.
Yeah.
Right. And our friend Kyle Sheely was adamant that they would never sell out. He was also very down
yes.
on that area, right, because of the parking and logistics and the jury.
That
still
remains
out
to be
on
seen.
It. Yeah,
and it remains to be seen. Let's be honest, too. I mean, like I said, the stadium looks great. Once it fills up, is it going to be as great?
Different
deal.
It's a
perfect example. And I was taking some. I got some blowback on Twitter about this. CHS Field, great looking ballpark. Every time I've been there, it's been a nightmare. In the concourses with the concessions, how they're set up, it's been a nightmare, and it's poorly done. No other way to put it. Poorly done.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Although because I've been there 4 or 5 times, and I love when I go there, but every time the CHS, I wait 30 minutes
yep.
in line for something. But then I was in
and
a
you
conversation.
Can't walk through the concourse because the lines are blocking
right.
the concourse.
Because I did not go last year, and some suggested last year was better. But didn't you go last year?
I don't know if I did. Maybe they did figure it out. And if they did, bravo. But my point is, okay, let's say next month comes and we got soccer there and it could turn into a nightmare. Hopefully not, but
yeah.
That obviously would diminish the experience. But as of right now, I mean, it is gorgeous.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Okay, so let's rank the sports venues in town. Because and then tomorrow, I mean, let's branch into just overall venues on the music side,
mm-hmm.
including your mansion, your new mansion on Summit Avenue. People don't know Adam just bought a house.
And I was looking at Allianz Field yesterday, and I'm hoping it becomes a outdoor music venue because I think it would be great.
What are we calling this now?
Allianz Field.
Allianz Field, yeah. Well, it could be a great one.
Let's
right?
be honest. It's going to get called the soccer stadium. No one's going to call it Allianz Field.
Well, Allianz, they're sponsors of a number of stadiums
yes.
around the country.
No, I know, but I'm just saying it's the only soccer team. I mean, it's soccer here is still a niche sport for so many people. They're
yeah.
going to say, hey, how yeah. you getting to the soccer stadium?
Yeah, true. And Allianz is open. No, it won't. We'd like to hear a little Allianz. So, I mean, now, I mean, you've got a stadium in your backyard. It is crazy. The amount of hours that have been spent by all the teams, all the politicians, all the constituents fighting, advocating for stadiums, and now all we do is open up stadiums in this town.
Yep.
It's.
I mean, I put my list together. I forgot like two of them that I had to.
No town
again.
Has opened up as many stadiums, arenas as us, and nobody can be close if you go over an extended period of time. So. What is your pecking order of sports venues I guess we could say either for a great game or for a lousy game, right? Because you just want to go to the event. Let me know. Text away. 81807. Back in moments on WCCO, and your Lindis Construction time check is 1223. Time to call for 75% off installation labor on Infinity by Marvin Windows. All right, let's go. Best venues in town. To me, it's still Target Field.
Yep.
Target Field, and to the Pollads' credit, they keep putting money in there. They continue to make it better and better, and now we're going to see it with some pretty significant changes to the plaza, right?
Right.
In an area, kind of your main, you know, your probably your main entrance, where that's been a cluster, too. Right. When they get people, and that's that could be a problem this year. But when they get good crowds and you're coming in that right field entrance, sometimes those lines are a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. So they've tried to clear that up. I have not been to Allianz, so I'll just go by what I've been at. I'm going Williams, too. I still love Williams Arena.
And that's the thing. When I originally wanted to do the list, it was like, okay, all but – I wasn't a basketball kid growing up. I went to a couple of games during the Haskins era that didn't exist, when it was rocking,
mm-hmm.
and it was cool. But I don't think I can give Williams Arena its proper due. But I mean, it's so classic that it's got to be up there, right?
Well, for sure.
I love the old Mariucci Arena too, which
right?
Is right on the other side, and
well, and so I. As a kid, went to so many games at Williams Arena. And, I mean, I was there when it was a fire pit of epic proportions. I was there at games when I was younger when they would simulcast them on the other side in Mariucci.
Yes.
And you'd hear the reaction like 2-3 seconds
right.
later.
I remember that now, yeah.
Because they're watching there. I'm going the X3. I think the X has held up so well because the X isn't brand new anymore. And you walk in the X, it's great. I'm going U.S. Bank 4. It's got all the bells and whistles, and the NFL is about what? Just excess and giant. And
that's it. I mean, it's stunning.
Yep.
But, I mean, it is what it is. It's a huge cathedral to the American gladiators.
To that, print money.
Yeah.
You know, it's just – I want to have – I don't know. It's hard to have intimacy with 65,000. It has none.
None.
It doesn't have any of that. I'll go CHS next. Target's last. I mean, I Target's.
Where's TCF Bank?
Well, yeah.
I'll put TCF Bank right above Target Center.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's my place. I spent. Heck, I might have spent for pure hours. More time there than outside of my house.
Yep.
And it's not lipstick on a pig. It's better than that. But we're retrofitting an arena that was – I mean, we talk so often about how Target Field was built in this small location. Target Center was built in a small location. Marvin Harver facing financial issues. But they can't do anything about the concourse. They really haven't changed the lower bowl that much.
No.
There's
still some seats. You sit down, and there's steps, like, right in front of you.
Yeah. And Glenn Taylor and the city, they spent a lot of money, and it's clearly better without question. But when you compare it to the other places in town, it's not there. And Mariucci, my new policy on Mariucci is, because we're still going to call Mariucci's, more than 7 people have to show up. Okay. More people have to show up. Lindsay, you want to differ with any of those at all? Or, like, if you could go to any venue, which would you go to?
Oh, man. I'm really into the outdoor ones. I liked Target Field a lot more for outdoor concerts after seeing Billy Joel there. I haven't spent enough time in U.S. Bank. But I will agree, when I drive by Allianz Field, the soccer stadium, when I drive by the soccer stadium, it looks pretty cool.
It does look
cool. The stuff from inside, the stuff I'm seeing from their PR team looks pretty awesome.
31 past 12. Jamie Ukus is with us. We're going to talk medicinal marijuana. But let's talk with a member of the Board of Regents on what is going on with the changing of the names of buildings on campus and a little concern about the task force and how they arrived there. Back in moments on CCU. This is a topic we have discussed a number of times. In this case, it's about the University of Minnesota and the push with a task force and the debate about reexamining the legacy of well-known individuals tied to the university, where they stood towards people, African-Americans, towards women. Sometimes religion, in this case, with the four people involved, Kaufman, Coffey, Nicholson, and Millbrook, it's primarily African-Americans and also some surveillance of Jewish students, that a task force was created and the decision was made to take names off buildings. And among the regents who has questions about the task force is Michael Hsu, who first was elected in 2015. This term runs out in 2021, and Michael is kind enough to join us. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time. From what you know right now, sir, do you think the names should be removed?
Well, right now, I think the report that we've been given is not complete enough to make that type of determination. In fact, I've discovered a lot of exculpatory information that was left out of the report. And what I'm trying to do right now is figure out, well, why was it left out? And, was it left out because it didn't support the recommendation, or was it left out for other reasons? And I can't think of any other reasons, but that's kind of where I am right now.
Well, okay, so let's push on that. Do you think the folks on the task force who oversaw this, were they capable of being on this task force? Did they meet your criteria when they were put together?
Well, I actually didn't have anything to do with putting the task force together, and I only knew one person on the task force. And I would say that I was never asked, whether or not this is a good task force or not. But I think most of them have academic backgrounds that suggest that they should be able to do this type of research and discover the information and build a record that kind of shows what the facts were as we know it today, and then make a determination and a recommendation. Now, the question is, did we put together enough standards for them to follow?
Yep.
What standards do you use when you're renaming a building? And they had a committee prior to that, it was also chaired by Dean John Coleman, Dean of CLA, John Coleman. And they put together a document that was, I think, released sometime last May.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that document, it has some reasonable things in it. But, what I'm really looking for is, we're being asked to overrule the regents of the day back then when these decisions were made for the naming. Because regents, that's one of the things that regents have the authority to do. It's to name and rename buildings. But the question is, a lot of this stuff, information that they're talking about today, was known back then. I mean, we knew there were protests. There were protests by students. We know that there were discussions about how to handle, who lives in what dorm and all that kind of stuff. So I think in order to rename a building, you really have to find something that the regents of the day did not know.
Yep.
And I don't know that the report clearly delineates what was known then versus what they've found out that the regents of the day couldn't have known.
So do you think, sir, respectfully, do you think at times when we have these discussions, including here at the U of M, that we're holding standards, morality, our boundaries in 2009 compared to maybe 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago, and it's unfair to do that when we're comparing such large differences and what was accepted by everyday society?
Well, I do think it's unfair to judge them by today's standards because, you know, we've come a long way, you know, and I know your dad just had a birthday.
Yep.
You know, 99, I think is
that is correct.
Is how old he is, right? So
yep.
he would have actually been living as a young kid back in the days that we're talking about, but very few other people are. And to say that, well, they should have done a better job. They should have seen, you know, what was coming down the road 15, 20, 30 years later, and they should have been the leaders and acted the way that we would expect them to act today, I think is unreasonable.
Michael Hsu is with us from the Board of Regents on this debate task force and the follow-up on whether the buildings should be named at the University of Minnesota. So let me circle back to the fact that certain questions may not have been asked. Do you have a suspicion that there was a reason why those questions were not asked or that evidence was not presented?
Well, so one of the questions I asked, which was, what was the board doing at this time? Because I can tell you that the Board of Regents would not have let this debate go on for 12 years if they wanted to end the debate. If, you know, this was in widely in the media, the Board of Regents at the time, I think, thought that they knew what they wanted to do. And we now have found board minutes since we had the meeting on the 8th of March.
Yep.
We have found board minutes that showed that this was actually discussed in a board meeting on July 31st, 1935. And the regents of the day decided how they wanted to handle it. And this, if you look at the regents who were involved in those days, one of them was Fred Snyder, who was John Pillsbury's son-in-law. He was a former state legislator, former Minneapolis alderman. He was a lawyer. And my feeling, after having done this research myself, I looked at the Snyder files, which his family generously gave to the university after he died in 1951, and I'm pretty sure I was the first person to look at this. I know no one on the task force looked at his files.
Well,
know,
let me,
years of files.
Can I jump in on that? Isn't that fairly shoddy
yeah, sure.
work then? If they didn't do that, if they're trying to make this assessment about what was going on at that particular time, and these files are available. And you found them. Shouldn't they have found them also and examined them thoroughly?
Well, I do believe they should have found them. I know that they found one letter written to President Coffey while he was still the dean of the Ag School in 1939. And Fred Snyder wrote him a letter. And the letter starts out saying, this letter is, you know, a follow-up to the telephone conversation we had about your race problem, you know, the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on. I could read it to you, but I don't have it in front of me. But he basically says that he wants Coffey to not make any commitments. He wants him to go slow, and he wants him to let this whole problem, whatever it is, we don't know what the problem is, but he references a problem. He wants it to let it play, wants Coffey to let it play out as long as he can. And my theory on that is that the Board of Regents, and Fred Snyder was one lawyer of other, you know, he wasn't the only lawyer on the board at the time, but he was a lawyer, and he references in the letter a case of a black kid who wanted to go to the University of Missouri Law School, and I think his last name was Gaines, and this case actually went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court decided, this is under Plessy versus Ferguson, which is the mm-hmm. law of the land
sure.
at the time.
Right.
Separate but equal is basically what it said.
Mm-hmm.
And so the University of Missouri didn't want to admit this kid into the law school. And so they said, hey, we don't want you to go to our law school, but what if you could get into another law school in a neighboring state and we pay for it? Would you be okay with that? And, you know, somehow he was selected to be, you know, a test case by, I think, the NAACP or whoever was working on this at the time. And by becoming a part of the test case, he couldn't accept the offer to go to law school, which I think he regretted. And his story, you know, there's a sad ending at the end of this, and people can go look it up online if they want to. But the bottom line is the Supreme Court ruled that the University of Missouri had to provide a separate but equal law school, basically. And guess what they did? They provided a separate but equal law school.
Yeah.
They took a cosmetology school,
right.
And they decided to convert that into a black law school. And that's incredible to me. Yeah. I had no idea about this case.
Sad.
But this case was decided by the Supreme Court in December of 1938. And Snyder writes this letter to Coffey in 1939, February 7th, 1939, referencing this case, because I think basically Snyder as a lawyer wants this whole thing to play out in the courts before the Board of Regents changes their decision that they made, you know, in the early 1930s.
So do you believe in any way that because this type of information was available, that there were members in the task force had already decided where they stood, and so they did not, so they intentionally didn't look for any evidence that might persuade them differently?
Well, that's what I want to know, because this letter was available to them, even though they had it because it was in the president's file, President Ford's files, and President Coffey's files when he was still dean of the law or the ag school. So they had this information. And so my question, this is one of the questions I haven't been able to ask yet, is why did you not use this letter?
Do you have any doubt that you'll get those answers?
Well, I sure hope so, because if this conversation is going to move forward, we have to get these answers. We can't just let this, you know, conversation go on without having the best information available to us.
And when will you vote on this?
I have no idea. I mean, right now, the intention was to try and get this whole conversation decision made before President Kaler finishes, you know, his term at the end of June. But, you know, I don't really see a hurry in this. I want to make sure we do a good job and do it right so that we don't, you know, can you imagine having to look back on this and say, oh, we have new information now that suggests that maybe we shouldn't change the names.
We
change the names.
Yeah, we'd put the names back on. Do you, I know another region is quoted in the Star Tribune story. Do you think there are multiple other regions who have some of the similar questions you have, or do you know that?
Well, I think I've been more deeply engaged than some of the other regions so far. And we, you know, I think as we move forward, I would hope that other regions share my concern. You know, this report, you know, is very one-sided. I had said in our board meeting that I expected a more fair report or fair treatment of this. And to be totally fair to the task force members, they did include some of the good things that these people had done, like President Kaufman created the General College, which, you know, enabled a lot of students to attend the University of Minnesota that, you know, wouldn't be admitted today or wouldn't even have been admitted at the time. And those types of things, you know, they recognize, you know, his achievements there. But on the other hand, you know, when you take a letter and you only cherry pick certain sentences out of the letter that support your case,
right?
I start to have a problem with, you know, whether or not how I should view the rest of the report, you know, once I find that out.
It's a very interesting analysis, sir, on what has taken place so far and your questions that you want answered before you make a decision. We'll reach out again and we'll pay attention to the story, and I appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks for the time.
Take Absolutely. Board of Regents member Michael Hsu on what's taking place here with these four names. And I think Michael raises some interesting points on selectively picking out points, what the task force did, what they didn't, and then the conversation we've had many times, including Lake Calhoun and other national issues, on we look at historic, important figures that are still relevant today because they have buildings named after them. We look at them historically, but then we look at where they stood on issues that if those came up today, we would find them outlandish, we would find them discriminatory, we would find them sexist. How do we try to affix our norms today on what was taking place 50 years ago, 150 years ago, and so on? I want to expand on that, but if you want to chime in, you certainly can. 817-8187 or a phone call 651-989-9226. Among the texts coming in, these two texts back to back, Chad, judging from the past eras, has no correct answer. They lived in their time, their standards, we do the same. It's almost like judging another culture. The best we can do is compromise and educate. Then the same person texts back after listening Further conversation, I retract my previous comments. Thank you for changing my mind. I just asked the questions. A good interview, a voice of reason coming from a hypersensitive world academia is refreshing. Thank you. Michael Hsu, I thought, was very good on it. Now, I guess I'm not shocked as someone who's lived here a fair amount of my life that it's possible that a task force at the University of Minnesota didn't do their job as effectively as they should have. It happens way, way too often. I want to see, I want to hear from others within the U of M if they feel the same thing, because I thought Michael raised a number of key points. If cherry picking is taking place, or if evidence was out there and it was not presented, that does beg the question, was it just incompetence or was it the agenda? Because, Lindsay, I wrestle with this because obviously some of the most significant figures in this country's history were a part of slavery and other things that were accepted that just seems abhorrent and antithetical to anything that seems possible right now. So then is it how egregious they were? Is it just one place that we can remove something? Or if it's something of the caliber of Washington or Jefferson and others, and it doesn't seem possible? Because there are times where someone takes it further as opposed to just accepting what was taking place at that particular time. Do you think you have a firm policy in that, or is it more a case-by-case basis? Because I have to almost go case-by-case, and I'm not sure I'm as consistent as I should be.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think it depends on the story. It depends on the actions of that person, how prominent it is. I also think, too, it depends on if you're connected to, you know, the school or the university or the city. You know, obviously you're going to be more passionate about it if it's something that, you know, you're connected to in real life. And, yeah, there is. There's no handbook for this. It's not.
No.
It's just like it's just an unfortunate part of history that you have to pay attention to.
Right. And we don't know if what is allowed and accepted and the two of us look at today that seems okay, that society 50, 60 years from now. Look at the changes in this country regarding same-sex marriage, how fast that happened even within the Democrats. This is many times. The 08 election, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama were both against same-sex marriage. That's not that long ago. All right, it's 12:57. President speaking with the Brazilian president. We will monitor that all throughout the afternoon here on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.